Turn off your lights. Make sure your doors and windows are locked. Things are about to get spooky.
Customer barely escaped an aggressive harasser. By Chemical Dirt 5586. This happened at my work just a few nights ago, and it definitely felt like the case of being in the right place at the right time. I had just gotten back from my break and was on my way back to my workstation when a middle-aged woman stopped me and asked me for help getting into the store's Wi-Fi. After a few minutes of trying to fiddle with it and troubleshooting, we found that her phone was almost completely without service. She reacted to this with a level of distress that seemed to go above and beyond mere frustration over not being able to use an app. I sensed that something serious was going on, so I asked her, "If you don't mind me asking, what exactly are you trying to do? Maybe I can help you figure out an alternative." She then informs me that she was in an unsafe situation. She mentioned a psycho who had been trying to follow her and said she was trying to call a friend of hers for help. Despite the fact that I'm technically only supposed to use it for work relay purposes on the clock, I immediately offered to let her use my phone and she gratefully accepted. Her friend luckily picked up the call from my phone. In our conversation with them, I heard her say things like, "I accepted help from someone whose intentions turned out not to be good, and now he's after me. I'm at Walmart. I'm scared he's going to come into the store and find me. Please come pick me up ASAP." After their friend hung up, I asked her if her friend was on their way and if she was going to be okay. She said yes. So I made my way to my workstation after wishing her well. Around 10 minutes later, I saw the woman again passing by my work area, and this time with a man. I hoped and prayed the man was her friend and not her harasser. About another 15 minutes later, the two of them came through my line to check out. I looked for an opportunity to pull the woman aside and discreetly ask her who the man with her was. But before I could do so, an old, bald man in a grimy corduroy jumpsuit approached both of them and began very insistently trying to get the woman to get into his car. The man, who I now realize was indeed the woman's friend, stood between the woman and the creep and firmly told him that she would not be going with him. The creep was persistent, and the friend basically had to tell him to screw off before he got the hint and fled. I turned to the woman and spoke. "I take it that's the guy who's been bothering you? Damn, he even looked like a creep. Are you okay now?" The woman nodded and thanked me for my help in getting in touch with her friend. She then turned to her friend and explained, "She's the one that helped me by letting me use her phone." Her friend turned to me with a smile and asked, "That was you, huh? With the out-of-state number? Well, thank you for helping her. She's a dear friend of mine." I smiled back and assured them both that I was happy to help and glad they were both okay. They finished checking out, and I saw them leave the store without any further trouble. I'm glad I was able to play a part in ensuring her safety. Your Siri implant records every single moment of your life from the day you're born, so when the judge began to play my memory from her murder, I knew it was done for. The memories themselves should be impossible to alter, so, despite being found not guilty, I was more afraid than ever before. Siri had edited the video, and I had a feeling it wasn't to save me. Creepy High School Teacher by Puzzlehead Pen 617. Narrated by Marie's Field of Nightmares.
Hello there, fellow Redditors. For context, this teacher was in his late 50s to 60s and was highly respected in the small central California community that I lived in. He was the AP economics teacher at my high school. This took place about 15 years ago when I was a senior. I remember several weird experiences with this teacher. One day in class, and I don't know how it was brought up, I will call him Mr. Smith, but Mr. Smith decided he was going to give our class a mental exercise. I didn't think anything of it, but then again, I was a pretty innocent and naive teenager at the time. The class went along with it and didn't see an issue with this. I remember him saying he was also a psychology professor at the local university. So, anyways, he told the class to close our eyes and meditate for a few minutes and begin thinking about immersing ourselves in a body of water. He said, it's okay if we envision a river, a creek, an ocean, or whatever, but he stressed it had to be water we were imagining ourselves in. So, I began letting the thoughts come, and I imagined myself next to a creek bed, throwing rocks into the water. You can stop now. Open your eyes. The exercise was done. He told us to remember our visions, and he said he was going to ask each of us what we imagined. Mind you, this class was split between girls and boys. So each of us goes around, one by one, and tells the class out loud what we thought about. I remember a boy in my class said he imagined himself in a rushing waterfall. There were girls that mentioned they were swimming in a lake, fishing at the pond, and so on. My turn came, and I told Mr. Smith in our class I imagined myself next to a small creek. I specifically remember he has this weird grin the entire time each of us were telling him what was in our minds during this exercise. Mr. Smith finally told us why he had the class do this exercise. He said the exercise was to measure our sexuality and our sexual awakening. He said the people who envisioned themselves in large bodies of water had a high sex drive, while the students who were in calmer and smaller environments of water hadn't really tapped into their sexuality. The boy who had the vision of being in a waterfall made a joke and the whole class laughed. I just remember thinking it was weird. I looked around at the class and it didn't seem like anyone was uncomfortable. If they were, they didn't voice it or express it. Mr. Creepy also did this thing where he would pick on a student and ask them a very specific question from our economics textbook. If the student didn't give him an answer he liked, he would stare them down for literally what felt like a minute without saying anything. You could feel the tension in the class, and usually the student with the wrong answer would sink down into their seat with humiliation. Anyways, a few months later, I approached Mr. Smith after class and asked him what I could do for extra credit. I only took away a few things from this conversation. I remember him telling me, "You are incredibly smart. I don't think you need extra credit." Okay, but still, I wanted extra credit. So he then says, "I love your shirt. Where'd you get it?" I was wearing a shirt with a unicorn and a yellow yield sign. So I told him I bought it at a thrift store called Red Light, located in Seattle, where I was from. He has his stupid grin again, and I ask, "What is it?" Mr. Smith said, "Red Light is a porn site. Did you know anything about that?" I immediately left. I later looked up the website, and sure enough, there was the porn site he was referring to. Later on in the semester, Mr. Smith stopped coming to class, and we had a substitute for the remainder of the year. I remember the other students whispering in class where Mr. Smith had gone, and some students were saying he got in trouble and was being investigated.
"Well, look at you. Aren't you a beautiful thing?" he said excitedly. Each limb came from a different person. Each piece of hair was a different color.
It took him over a decade to make it, but it was finally complete. Can't You See How Much I Love You? By Girl Veteran. Quick warning before this story starts, this one does talk about domestic abuse. If this is not something you can listen to or want to listen to, please skip to the next story. I do have timestamps for that for you guys. When I first got out of the Army, I was in a relationship with a guy in the 3rd Ranger Battalion. Let's call him Jim. Jim Radis. He and I had an apartment together, and I thought I loved him. So instead of going back to my house in Nebraska, I stayed in Columbus, Georgia. Our relationship started out with him being what I thought was protective over me. Even though I was very attractive at the time, I had very low self-esteem because of an assault I experienced while I was living in the barracks and the bullying I endured afterwards. Things moved very quickly. In fact, we were inseparable from the night we met. Anytime another man would look at me, he would get very confrontational towards the guy. I felt safe and protected by this. It made me feel special. I thought he must really value me if he would get upset by a guy looking my way. At first. Soon we would be out at the bar, he would get hammered every time, and act very nasty towards me if he thought I was looking at another guy. This would cause bitter fights, and I would always end up in the fetal position in bed, sobbing. But still, I stayed. The next day, he would always apologize, make excuses about it being because he was so drunk. But then, he would proceed to explain to me why what I had done was wrong. It wasn't long before I found myself totally isolated from my friends and family, because he was so insecure he made me take all of my phone calls on speakerphone. My family begged me to leave, but I was afraid I couldn't get by on my own. Then one night, we came home from the bar in the usual fashion, him screaming in my face and me sobbing. I told him I was going to get a room in a motel, and he lost his frickin' mind. He yanked the key out of the ignition and threw them into the woodlands. He then got out of my car and proceeded to kick in the front corner panel of my car. He used so much force that the hinge to the passenger door were bent. I told the insurance company it was a hit and run, or I never would have been able to get the damage fixed. He screamed at me to get inside the apartment, but I couldn't unlock the door without my keys, which he blamed me for. He then grabbed me and started to shove me into the front door, first by my shoulder, then with his hands around my throat, screaming, "Can't you see how much I love you?" I rasped, "No, I can't." He let go, and I fell to the ground in a heap. That night, I had finally had enough. I was finally so angry that I didn't feel afraid anymore. That morning, while he was sleeping it off, I began to make my plans. I started by telling him he had to leave and move back into the barracks. When he refused, I had to get his chain of command involved to make him leave the apartment and go to live in the barracks or on someone's couch in the street, just as long as he wasn't with me. He stalked me relentlessly. I filed for an OP, but he bullied me into dropping it. I knew I'd never be free of him if I stayed. So my parents sent me money, via Western Union, this was 2002, and I rented a Persec truck and trailer. Got help from neighborhood guy friends to load it up as soon as the sun set, and I brought it from where I was hiding it. My best chance was to leave under the cover of darkness. I was really sick that night. I was running a fever of 103 degrees, but I knew it had to be then. It couldn't wait. I just told myself I had to get out of the city limits, then I could pull over and sleep a little bit. I figured I would just drive as much as I could and then rest when I couldn't push any harder. I put my puppy in the cab of the truck with me, towing my car behind the truck, and left. I don't know how, except through divine intervention, but somehow I managed to drive non-stop from Fort Benning, Georgia, to my parents' home in rural Nebraska. I stopped only for fuel, at which time I would feed, water, and walk my little dog, Scruffy, use the facilities, and get food and drink I could afford on my meager budget. I drove 14 hours and pulled into my parents' drive around 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. I crashed on their old couch and slept for nearly 24 hours straight. I still hope nothing for pain and suffering for him. He turned me on to pills, then coke, then crack, all while he was still on active duty. He was a scumbag of a soldier and a man. He reached out to me on social media a couple of years ago. I told him what a piece of steaming shit he was, and I told him to rot in hell. It felt amazing, even after all these years, to say that to him and have him the one stammering. I'm actually glad he reached out to me and gave me the opportunity to verbally rip him to shreds. I'm not afraid of you anymore, Jim. So let's not ever meet again. The old fortune-telling woman told me I'd die by drowning, so I spent my life avoiding water. As the doctor struggled to drain the fluid building in my lungs and the sensation of slowly drowning overwhelms me, I suddenly wish I just enjoyed the beach before suffering the inevitable. Summer of 2009 was horrible, by Anonymous. Narrated by Marie's Field of Nightmares.
So, this happened when I was 15 and my little sister was 12. Little backstory here. We lived in this small town for several years and it was safe. A few years into living there, we had a cop with his wife and kid move in two houses down from us. Our house was built sometime in the 1920s. This is a different town than my previous post, by the way. A few nights before this incident, our other siblings locked us out of the back door. Us being idiots, we kicked the back door in. The door didn't budge, but the frame came out of the wall, and the door was just hanging. One of our blinds were broken. We didn't have the money to fix it, seeing as my parents had 8 kids and money was tight growing up. Anyways, the blinds were broken behind our TV. On the other side of the window was our garage and our driveway. Next to the driveway, on our neighbor's property, which was abandoned, had tall shrubs. What we didn't know was there was 2 people hiding in the shrubs watching us. I'm gonna leave some details out to make a long story short. My little sister's name will be Candace. My name will be Aria. It was summer of 2009. My oldest brother and his girlfriend was a mile from our house fishing about 10 at night. All of our siblings and parents were asleep. Besides my oldest brother out with his girlfriend fishing, I was sitting in front of the TV watching TV. Candace was sitting on the bed watching TV with me. All of a sudden, Candace and I heard a very loud crashing noise from the back door. We both screamed. We got up, ran to the phone, and called our brother's cell phone. He said he was on the way back because his girlfriend twisted her ankle. He gets home. By this point, we woke everyone up in the house and had all the lights on. My brother tells us to stay in the house. My brother is 6'4", 300 pounds. Unknown to my family, I slipped outside to check with my brother. I know this was stupid of me to do, but I was a curious kid. I saw my brother being really quiet. He ran back to our fenced-in backyard. He gets within arm's reach of this guy, and he steps on a stick. The guy turns and looks back at my brother and takes off running and hops the fence, and he got away, sadly. I didn't see this because I went back into the house after a while. My brother comes in, he tells everyone what he saw, and that it was a guy in all black and he's about 6 foot. That is all he saw. The rest of the night was all calm. My brother on high alert, though. The next night, my brother was out with his girlfriend, wherever they were at that time. It was again about 10 at night. Candace and I were watching TV again in the same spot as last time. Again, we hear a loud crash coming from the back door. We screamed again and called our brother's cell phone. He came home again. The whole house was awake again and all the lights were on. My brother goes out and checks it out. This time, he didn't see anyone out there. I forgot to mention both of these times, we looked at the back door. Both times, the back door looked like it was kicked in really hard. This time, around the frame, was out of the wall more. The door was leaning further into the house. We didn't make a police report because we had a cop that lived 2 houses down from us. While he was at work, us kids would help take care of his pregnant wife, bring her over food, play with their kids. We didn't really see him much. And when we did, he was very sweet and nice. But anyways, we told the police officer what had happened. He told us that he thinks there's 2 guys and that they've been stalking our house and watching us. The cop comes over and checks and looks. He said, "I believe there's 2 guys. One is the lookout and hides right here in the shrubs. He keeps lookout while the other one does the possible breaking in." He said they had to have been looking through our broken blinds. He said at night they could look in and you couldn't see anything if you looked out. After those 2 nights, there was no attempted break-ins anymore. Fast forward to the fall of that year, our cop neighbor told us. He said, "I'm not supposed to tell you this, but we caught a peeping Tom. He's in jail now, about 20 or so miles away." He said that after the peeping Tom was caught, it all stopped and the town was safe again because of it. Candace and I were so freaked out and scared. To this day, her and I have to have all of our doors and windows locked. We check multiple times a day. If any of our curtains are open, we get scared. We close the curtains every time. I'm honestly afraid that it'll happen again. We no longer live in that town, but that thought is still there. Sorry, this is a long post. To this day, we don't know what their intentions were. I think if he would have gotten in, we wouldn't be here today. This is all just scary.
After the event, desperate and dehydrated, I stared at the one edible item I found in the abandoned house, a large jar of canola oil. After I began to chug it, I cried as I realized it was just someone's old urine, but I kept drinking because it's all I had. It's been 5 years since that relationship, and I still haven't dated anyone since. By Anonymous. Quick warning before this story starts, this one does talk about domestic abuse. If this is not something you can listen to or want to listen to, please skip to the next story. I do have timestamps for that for you guys. I was a sophomore in high school, and I fell head over heels for the new quiet guy, and I thought he was my forever. Crazy, but I would actually go on marrying down the road just 1 week after graduation. High school sweethearts. Looking back now, I can see how many red flags I noticed but ignored because I was a young, eagerly waiting to grow up. Fast forward. The night before my wedding day, I was going over last-minute wedding details with Mom, who is easily one of the most caring and selfless people I know. So, bless my sweet mama's heart when I asked her if she'd be mad if I decided I didn't want to go through with the wedding. The wedding was, of course, the next day. But, me being me, Mom thought I was messing with her. I couldn't tell her the truth of what was going on now. So I took a deep breath and forced a believable chuckle. She generally thought I was pulling another one of my jokes. I went on to finally tell her the truth almost a year after I escaped him, and she still feels bad about not taking it seriously. No one knew what was going on behind closed doors, but makes sense. I was honestly his biggest PR team. Only 2 hours passed saying I do's, and he was throwing me out of the truck in my parents' driveway, cursing and yelling that he wanted divorce. Recklessly driving off, so much for all that honeymoon phase on our actual honeymoon. I ran inside and my dad came out of the bedroom, and he can't understand a word I'm saying, but he's trying to basically ask me what was happening, and I say it as clear as I could while uncontrollably sobbing.
He left me! How could he? On our honeymoon!
My dad is pissed, but then relaxes and tries to rationalize the situation. Like, maybe he forgot something, pulled a bad joke, or something like that. Then we see his truck flying in on our driveway and my dad smiles, saying, "See? He's right there." I wipe my tears and walk out the door and tell him, yes, it was a prank. Inside, I was screaming. I was so embarrassed for myself because now I look crazy. But if I wanted to save this relationship, they could never know the truth. Months go by and he starts being sweeter ever since we had to be long distance because he was in the military at training. But as soon as I would pack up my life and move to Texas with him, I could tell my parents were starting to see the cracks I had worked so hard to glue together. My mom even picked up my phone on the table, mistaking it for hers, and saw this huge message from my ex and just started crying, begging me to stay because he was not a good person. But I assured her that this was way out of character for him, a lie, and that he was just lonely. I knew she didn't believe me, but she also knew I was stubborn and was going to do whatever, regardless of her concerns. Just a few weeks in Texas, I knew my life was in danger. It was Thanksgiving Day, and my family just called to check up on us and just tell us Happy Thanksgiving. And the moment I hung up, the man that I thought was my soulmate started cursing at me, saying that I needed to stop talking to my family because he was my family now. I let a little chuckle, thinking he got to be joking, and he picked up our wedding glasses. I specifically had them made for us, and throws them directly at me, shattering around me. Shocked, I didn't know what to do, so I walked over to the broom and started sweeping up the broken glass. You may be hearing this and think, surely he had been done throwing a tantrum by now, but no. He then throws picture frames at me while I'm sweeping up the glass. Honestly, that broken glass on that wooden floor was just a metaphor for any love I had left towards this man. I broke that night. I stopped seeing him as my other half, and more as the monster I'm now stuck with. I became very depressed, and he loved that. He would break me down over and over again just to get a reaction. 2 months go by, and one night he completely lost his shit over the washer and dryer people messing up the day they were supposed to come out, and he starts pacing back and forth, mumbling words I can't quite make out, but demanding that I call and fix it, grabbing me and sat me down on the couch, telling me what to say and that I better not fuck it up. Like a damn negotiation. This man was paranoid as fuck, making comments that they were doing it because he was a soldier, then started blaming me even though I wasn't even around him when he first called in the first place, but still yelled at me for hours until, snap, he walked to the bedroom, me, I'm on the couch still processing this fucking moment. Tommy.
You're so fucking stupid. This is your fault. Did you plan this with the workers just to make me look dumb? Or are you really just that fucking dumb, huh, you stupid fucking bitch?
Him again.
That's what I fucking thought, you fucking no good, ungrateful bitch.
Myself.
You know what? I'm done. You won't do anything except for complain and bitch at me, blaming me for everything. All you do is curse and yell at me for no damn good reason. He looked at me with the look that I have heard other victims try to describe, and the best I can describe it is a darkness in his eyes, like an emptiness that still causes me nightmares to this day. Without hesitation, he lunged at me in the middle of the day with our curtains open, door wide open, neighbors out and about. He throws me against the wall and starts choking me. I slowly see black, but he lets go for a second. Just then, he slams my entire body to the floor. At the moment, I either blacked out or my brain was trying to shield myself from what was happening. But piece by piece, I would come to, and he was holding me by my shoulders and just repeatedly slammed me on the wooden floor. My screams ignored by the people outside. I plead for anyone to call the police and repeat yelling for help over and over. My fight or flight takes over and I choose flight. I run to the main bathroom and lock the door, frantically calling my mom because at that moment I just want to hear her voice, unsure that it would be my last. But my poor mom didn't know the nightmare of that phone call until it was too late. She was with my sister and my dad, and she puts me on speakerphone because we usually do this so that all of us can talk like we're all together. But instead, they hear me screaming for my life and hear my ex calling me awful names and telling me to get my ass in there and to unlock the door. They were confused and my dad was ready to come and kill this asshole himself. But then, silence. No more banging, just me softly crying and just trying to calm my mother over the phone and tell her that I'm alright and I now know I need to leave him, but I have to do it in the safest way possible because if he were to catch me, I may not make it out with my life. When I walk out of the room, my ex is just sitting there with a blank stare, like nothing had happened. This was a theme throughout our 3-year relationship. But I could no longer ignore the escalation of his behavior. So, one night, I put my escape plan into action. I was going to make a run for it. It was 2 a.m. Keys to my Pontiac were on the kitchen table, and he was asleep in the bedroom that I wasn't allowed in for several days earlier. I busted out of the guest bedroom that was my prison and beelined out of the front door quietly, but also as quickly as possible. 9.5 hours to my home state, only stopping once in Dallas to fill up on gas. With every mile in my rearview mirror, I felt something inside that reassured me. I'm free now. Forever scared, but most have healed and faded. I 100% believe that had I stayed, I'd be 6 feet deep. So, to my abusive ex-husband that I fled from that late February night, let's not meet again. Ever. Mercy dogs will alert the medics to the location of wounded soldiers and sometimes even drag the soldiers towards safety. I was so glad when Lucky found me and started dragging me towards the trench that lay beneath the Red Cross tent, but confused as to why she stopped short and started nuzzling my hand. On a New York Train with a Creepy Man, by Anonymous. This happened back in 2018. I was 24 and my sister was 25. We are both native New Yorkers, and there are plenty of stories I have. I think we all know New York is strange. Anyways, we are both on a crowded train going to meet up with a friend. There were no seats, so we're holding on to the pole. It was already a tight squeeze, but this man and this woman, non-related, got on and hold the pole that my sister and I were both holding. We're talking, and I notice the man directly in front of us keeps on looking at us. Like, really looking. I'm already feeling uncomfortable as it is, and it's hard not to pay attention. I try to ignore it by talking to my sister. By the way, we are nowhere near our destination. A couple of train stops later, he eventually says to us,
Are you guys sisters?
We both look at one another, feeling awkward, and I'm like, yeah? At this point, I'm praying that the train would hurry up to the next stop so we can get off. I know my sister is thinking the same. The other girl is looking at us, and she looks uncomfortable. He smiles and seems to get excited, if you know what I mean. He then says to us,
"Oh yeah, you guys are sisters,"
in an incredibly perverted tone. He licks his lips and keeps looking from my sister to me back and forth. At this point, the girl gives us an awkward smile and looks just as terrified as we do. I can tell this man is getting really excited by the fact that we are sisters and comments how beautiful we are. My sister looks at me and we see a stop coming up. We both know it's not our stop, but we're leaving the train. He keeps trying to talk to us and we keep ignoring him. And as soon as the doors open, we leave that train. Again, I've been in many weird and uncomfortable situations, but the fact that he was literally so close to us with his perverted smile, his excited eyes, and excited, you know what. Yeah, I'm glad we're able to get away from him safely. Thankfully, he didn't follow us. Knowing the only chance at a cure would come from future technology, I contacted a ship to slowly lower me towards a black hole on a long cable. When I finally returned thousands of years later, I was told my idea had caught on, and that almost everyone, including all the doctors, had tried the same trick to get a glimpse of the future. And with that, our time together is coming to an end. First of all, if you have a story you would like me to narrate, there are three ways you can send it. You can go to my subreddit, you can email it, or you can go to my website and hit submit. You can always be anonymous as well if you like. I also like to thank Marie from Marie's Field of Nightmares for joining me this evening to narrate two of these stories. You did a really amazing job, and she's a really good friend of mine. So please check her out. As always, all the links are down in the show notes / description box for you guys. Last, but never least, I'd like to thank the writers who let us read their stories. We had half anonymous and half normal stories this evening, which is unusual. I had, and I can understand, quite a few people wanting to be anonymous for this one, so. One of the stories Marie read about the creepy teacher reminded me of a creepy teacher I had when I was in high school. He went into early retirement due to some of the things he was saying. If there's anyone in school listening right now, hopefully just teenagers and older, if a teacher is acting weird and saying stuff that you find inappropriate, please go to the admins and tell them. Those people need to be taken out of the school. There are very clear lines that they shouldn't be crossing, and it's really just disgusting to say those kind of things to teenagers. Just, ugh. Second of all, if you are finding that your significant other, whether you're male or female, is being abusive in any way, the most dangerous part is when you realize and you're trying to escape. That, sadly, is most likely when they're going to end your life. Most places have programs where they can help you get away. But if you have any support system whatsoever still left, try to use it. You have to act quickly, decisively, and get out. You just have to be really careful and make sure all your ducks in a row when you go to do it, because if they catch you, that's when you're in danger. So please be safe. And never let anyone take all your support systems away. Your family, your friends, everyone that you care about as well. If they keep saying, "Well, I hate when you go out," or blah, 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 if they always make you feel bad for spending time with anyone that isn't them, that is a really bad red flag, and you need to be paying attention. And if you're ever out somewhere and you're having a gut feeling that something is off, be loud, be annoying, call the cops, do whatever you need to get away from them. I know I'm being a little more rambly today, but with these stories specifically, I like to point out things you can do to better keep yourself safe. These are the stories that I find more dangerous, people putting themselves in more danger, and what you should be paying more attention to get yourself out of things. I know I'm more here for light entertainment and listening and all that stuff, but I still like to think that you guys can take something away from this and learn. Now, with all that being said, if you enjoyed this video, hit that like button and make sure it feels it. If you're new, I hope you will subscribe and turn that pretty little bell to all notifications. And of course, I would love a comment. Tell me what you think, what kind of stories you like in the future. Maybe if you have some advice for any of these people or people in the future if they ever see themselves in similar situations. If you're on the podcast and are able to, please leave a review. And if you're on Spotify, there are questions that you can answer if you like as well. And of course, whether you're on the podcast or YouTube, you can share this with anyone who might enjoy it. It helps quite a bit and gets the word out. If you'd like to help in a more financial way, I do have Patreon and memberships, where you get early access and a few other bonuses. I also have PayPal, Buy Me a Coffee, and Super Thanks if you guys just want to do like a one-time kind of tip thing as well. All these things are never expected, but just always appreciated, guys. I'm just happy with you guys watching and listening and enjoying the stories I find for you guys. That's what has always meant everything to me. Sleep tight, and don't let 42 bite.